The Tom Woods Show, episode 552.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Today's episode is brought to you by Gamefly, where you can rent as many console and handheld games as you like and get them delivered right to your mailbox. Tom Woods Show listeners can get a free 30-day trial at tomwoods.com/game. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We're talking again, Michael Malice and I, about Alexander Hamilton, but this time we're talking about the debate itself, and it really is a fun conversation. I know you're going to enjoy it. I always enjoy talking to Michael, and we are going to plot a little bit about what's coming in the future. You know Michael Malice at this point. He's a celebrity ghostwriter. He's the author of Dear Reader, which I urge you to check out at tomwoods.com/552. Everything related to what we're talking about is at tomwoods.com/552. What else am I going to say? I've been a little late getting the shows out today and yesterday. I have not been feeling well lately. I'm just feeling exhausted. So I've sort of been taking my time a little bit the past couple of days, but I think I'm more or less back to normal. I'm looking forward to Christmas and taking a little bit of time off. But anyway, let's turn things over to Michael Malice. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom.
We're going to talk about our debate. And I aired it here on the show yesterday, and I urged people to watch the video if at all possible. There, in a way, it really is a visual experience. In particular, first of all, just the opening credits that our wonderful camera guy did for us are just tremendous.
John F. King, let's give
John F. King, indeed. I don't know what the F stands for, but he is really darn good. I'll just put it that way.
It stands for Federalist.
I can't believe I'm still handing you material.
You can't
anyway,
win, except for
he
debates,
did it. He did an absolutely. That's lose. Right. That's right. He did an absolutely super job. So I'm going to link to the video at tomwoods.com/552, and /551 was the episode where I play the audio of the debate.
Wait, let me hold on. Let's talk about that intro for a second.
Oh yeah, it's super. Yeah, let's talk about it.
So I will argue this with a straight face. I think Dallas – so the intro, for those people who don't know, is an homage to the 80s television series Dallas, which, Tom, we're so old, some kids in their 20s don't know what Dallas is. I ask them – like if I meet people who are younger than me and I try to get their gauge of what they know, I ask, do you know what Dallas is? They'll say, you mean the city. So Dallas was a series from the 80s, from 1978 or 79, I believe, till 1991. It was the biggest rated series of the entire 80s, and it was the first show to demonstrate in a major way that you could take a soap opera format and apply it to prime time and have it be quality. And I think it's the greatest show in history. I'm not joking, because it's so well written, and the characters are all driven by, you know, rational philosophies and the conflicts they get into. And it's often contrasted with Dynasty, which was its competitor, which is terrible dreck. You know, it's just soap opera trash. So it's really a masterpiece of a show. So the opening to Dallas, the series, was very iconic, where each character is introduced with a screen split into three panels. And it's always been on my bucket list to have that done for me in some capacity. So I mentioned that to John. I'm like, you know, this would be such a bucket list thing, but obviously it's not possible. And he goes, no, I'll do it. And when he did it, I almost started crying. I was so happy.
It came out so well. I'm just so thrilled about it. And, you know, I didn't watch Dallas in the 80s. I do remember the country was absolutely consumed by the question of who shot JR. Remember that?
Yeah.
When that happened, the whole country was talking about this.
Well, I would highly recommend going back and watching it, because it holds up superbly. And what's fascinating is Larry Hagman, who was the protagonist, JR, as you mentioned, I have a leather-bound signed copy of his autobiography. Fun fact, he was signing those books on September 11th.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. I've given people the background on the debate, and anyway, if for some reason we have people listening today who didn't listen to the debate or have no idea what we're talking about, I don't know how you stumbled on this episode, because I tried to make it clear in the title. This is not the episode for you. But Michael and I debated the subject of Alexander Hamilton, specifically the resolution, Alexander Hamilton was a hero for the cause of liberty. And we debated that in New York City, in basically a debating society, the junto that has a debate more or less every month or most months of the year, and it's in the Oxford style where the audience is polled before and after. And we had, as I've noted in the previous episodes, we had the biggest crowd they have ever attracted for any of these debates. So I thought that was a great
thing. Going back years, they're not.
No, they are not. They have been around for many, many years. So this is it's just wonderful feedback for us, and we were so glad to see all everybody who was there. And I didn't hear anybody. And I was listening in on a lot of private conversations. I didn't hear anybody complaining. I heard everybody say they had just a wonderful time, including the debaters.
Oh, yeah. I think we came in there with the same exact intention in mind, which is to put on a great show, have a blast, poke fun at each other. And the other thing is, what I think some of your listeners don't realize is that there isn't that much daylight between you and I on this issue. I think very commonly people who don't know that much about Hamilton really regard him as a Woodrow Wilson FDR figure, because the idea is anyone who wants government therefore is our enemy. But the point is, in certain situations, like if I'm being raped at this moment, I do want government at that moment. It's not as simple as that, and it's very easy to take him out of context.
I do understand the point that you made regarding that. That in this particular situation, I don't suddenly want anarchism and then have to sit and wait for 3 weeks for the defense agency to be established, right?
Right.
I mean, I do understand that. But I think based on Hamilton's rhetoric, I think he's going beyond that. If he were living today, he would be absolutely thrilled with everything that's going on.
Correct. My point is to view him in a contemporary context where he's saying one thing for the purpose of increasing the state, for the sake of increasing the state in a progressivist kind of way, is not true. He's doing it maybe in like a Giuliani kind of way, which is not great, but is certainly more is certainly different than people popularly conceive him of.
Were you surprised by the initial polling where it was 16%? Basically on your side, 41% for me, and 43% undecided. I'll tell you, I was very surprised that there were so many undecideds. I thought people would come in with their minds made up and they would just sit and enjoy it.
I had no idea how the initial vote was going to go, to be fair. Given that the junta is very Ayn Rand-centered, which is something I tried to play into in my points in the debate, I thought they would possibly be very heavily for me to begin with.
That is true. And I suspect that's really where I think that 16% that started off with you, that was the hardcore of the group. But I think the crowd that showed up for this thing so overwhelmed the hardcore. Because my sense is that it's an older group. But when you looked into our audience, it was overwhelmingly a younger group.
Yes. So I think a lot of people came in with open minds. I have no issue with losing, as I told you over email, is we both we didn't take from each other. We took, like capitalism, it's not a fixed pie. We each just took from the undecideds, and you took much more from the undecideds than I did. So we both persuaded a significant amount of people.
Well, I can't remember actually if I told you this or if I just told Heather, but afterward I told somebody. I think I told you that actually as it was going on, and even before it was going on, as I just thought about the whole thing and I thought about you as a person and your arguments, I really thought to myself that not only would I have no problem really with losing to you, but I actually, as it was going on, I almost kind of wanted you to win. That sounds really weird after all the abuse we heaped on each other leading up to it, but I thought, he really has taken an underdog position here. He's taken a really hard case to argue because, as you say, most libertarians would go into this thinking there isn't even a case to be made.
Right.
And you stood up there and made that case, and I thought you did make some good points, and I thought he put such heart into this, it would be a crying shame for him to lose. But then I thought, well, wait a minute. Yours truly also put a little effort into this too.
Oh, of course, and that's very sweet, and that's very fair. But I mean, my only goal is for people to realize this man was enormously influential, and much of this influence was very bad, unquestionably. But he's much. We're so used, a lot of libertarians hate the mainstream culture, which is divided into Republican and Democrat. And they're doing that same thing here, meaning that he does one thing that's bad, therefore let's into the trash he goes. Whereas he was so pervasive in his influence and such an awesome person on a personal level that you can't just dismiss him and, you know, regard him as a pure, you know, Chairman Mao figure.
All right. What are your overall thoughts about the debate itself? Are, you know, the statements, the questions, whatever? What stood out to you?
This is going to sound like I'm taking away from your victory, and I don't want to imply that in any way. I really blew it with the introductory statement.
Yeah, that was a shame.
I had 20 pages to go, 20 pages of notes, and I'm being all, let's talk about my little props. I came in with a quill pen, which was 14 inches long. I had a dollar sign lapel pin, just like Ayn Rand wore. I had my hair cut like Ivan Drago, in Rocky IV style. And I'm doing my introductory talk, and that's a huge advantage for me, because you have to react to what I say. So I have weeks to set up the debate, and then you have to be, you know, kind of spontaneous. So that's a huge advantage for the person arguing in favor of the resolution. And as I'm speaking and making my points and hitting you pretty hard, the card goes up that I have 5 minutes left, and he's not even in the Washington administration. And I'm like, I'm screwed.
But my question was, I never, ever rely on the guy holding up the card. I always have a wristwatch, because otherwise I'd never be able to pace myself.
But Tom, every time I've given a speech, I don't know how this is, I've always been able to nail it to the minute, just psychologically. Okay. Like, I have that skill. And that was completely lost to me that day, and that really threw me for a major loop.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that was too bad. Now, it wasn't quite as bad as the case of Warren Coates. Years ago, I was in a two-on-two debate on the Federal Reserve out in Vegas for Freedom Fest, and Warren Coates was on the other side. Coates gets up to give his opening statement in favor of the Fed, and he begins by saying, now look, I will admit the Fed has made atrocious mistakes, and he went and listed them, and then he ran out of time. He never got to tell us why we should support the Fed. And so I thought, well, at least Michael didn't have quite that happen.
And everyone I spoke to afterwards said, maybe it's true what I said about my introductory being cut off, but that my broader perspective really came through over the course of the debate.
Yeah, that's true. I think that is true.
So the case was made. And I mean, again, that was very important to me to lay out that case, because I think a lot of people were accusing me of either trolling or, you know, engaging in intellectual exercise for the sake of, you know, kind of this fun thing. And I really do admire Hamilton enormously.
Yeah, no, there's
enormously.
No question about that. And I was glad that people were able to see that you were actually making a real argument. And as time went on, you kept pointing out particular episodes in Hamilton's life that you would then respond to by saying, isn't that heroic? Isn't that a case of a hero of liberty? And every time you did that, I felt like votes were slipping out of my hands, as every time you would do it. And then, of course, I tried to respond by picking out, you know, enormities from his life and saying, well,
right,
there's your hero of liberty. So for a little while, we got a little bit bogged down on the definition of what a hero of liberty is, which is not really as interesting as the significance of Hamilton.
And I think most of those stories that I told you, if they were the entirety of his biography, you would agree these are awesome stories.
They
and
were.
Heroic.
They were really great stories. Now, I will say it's funny that I'm glad actually that you felt like you had kind of an advantage being the opening speaker, because I was afraid you'd feel you were at a disadvantage, because I liked being the follow up, because I'm okay at responding to people. But the point is, I get the last word. And that's a difficult thing for the first person to deal
not,
with.
Not with me,
yeah.
Tom.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
not with
Michael
me.
Michael Malice having the last word. Michael. But I mean, according to the strict definition of how the debate works, I'm able to say, you know, it could be like how George Washington felt about the National Bank. You know, whoever spoke to him last, he was persuaded by. So people hear you talk about Hamilton and they say, oh, maybe there's a, and then they hear me, they go, oh, yeah, I was right the first time. You know, so I was able to do that.
Well, I thought since I knew you knew the arguments I had made on your show, And those were not the arguments I would make in an Ayn Rand audience. So I knew you would not have heard my arguments before. So I really thought that would put you on your heels.
Yeah, isn't that funny that when initially we planned this whole thing and people were asking, well, if we can't come, will you make it an episode of your show? And I thought, well, yeah, I guess, but we've already covered this on the show. And what an idiot. I mean, this is all new information. I mean, not all new, but mostly new information. And plus the way it was done, when you're in a formal debate setting, it's rather different from a podcast. It was great fun. And of course I would make an episode out of it. But you're right. I thought, especially when you kept taunting me about how I didn't know what to expect and you were going to crush me and there's a coroner in attendance and everything else. I thought, what on earth could there be about Hamilton that I don't know? And so I kept telling people, I don't know what this guy's going to do to me, but I feel like I have plenty of facts on my side, so I don't see how I can go wrong.
Well, again, since I don't believe in democracy and Hamilton didn't either, facts are largely secondary.
Well, it was funny. I mean, afterward, I assumed you would have thought of this already, but I thought, look, even if Michael loses, he could say that just proves his point about Hamilton, that you can't trust the people.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think it's a cheat.
Yeah.
I don't want to take away
No, and I understand that. But honestly, even if you – I mean, honestly, I know that we appreciate and respect each other. So even if we joke and rag on each other afterward, I have no – and by the way, you'll notice that in the wake of the debate, I haven't done any victory laps at all.
Is this passive aggressive gloating?
Well, let's see.
Is this passive aggressive gloating?
Yeah.
Oh my
yeah,
by, God, that is so sad.
By talking about how gracious I've been.
Yeah. Have you noticed how gracious I've been when I won and kicked your ass? Did you notice I never brought it up?
Yeah, but I mean, that is still something, right? And it's just because after I walked out of it, I really felt like it had been one of the most enjoyable and exciting academic style events I'd ever had. So the idea that I would then go and, you know, put images of you with your face all bloodied everywhere on Twitter just didn't seem right.
Well, it's also interesting, as I texted you when I left, I'm extremely competitive and that's why I always win, except for this one time. And I didn't resent losing. You know, a lot of times, even if you win a debate, you're going to go back in your head and you're like, oh, I wish I'd said this. I wish I'd said that. And I didn't feel that was the case that evening. I think I said everything basically I need to say. I had some good lines I didn't get to, but that's fine. And I also think it's interesting. I bet you if we had a different crowd, maybe if it was a more public school crowd, the outcome would have been very different.
That's true. All right, let's explore that in a second. I want to pause just for this message. I know I have a lot of game players in my audience, and Gamefly is an easy way to play a lot of games and spend just a little money. Instead of buying 2 to 3 games a year, you could get an entire year's worth of the Gamefly service and rent as many games as you want. With no late fees, with a pre-addressed envelope for easy returns, there's no contract, you can cancel anytime, and rentals will ship to arrive to you on the actual game release dates. If you're interested in brand new games, they'll arrive to you on the day of release. And if you decide you like a game, you can keep it at a heavily discounted rate. Get a free 30-day trial at tomwoods.com/game. Folks, it's the Christmas season, so make sure you're getting the biggest bang for your buck by using Ebates when you do your Christmas shopping. I've gotten countless emails from people saying, I've been listening to the show, so I've started using Ebates, and I just got a check for $35. I just got a check for $50 for doing something that I'm doing anyway, namely shopping online. They give you rebates for practically any purchase you might make online, well, at least at 1,800 or so retailers. And what's more, they'll give you $100 if you refer just 3 people. Check it out through tomwoods.com/ebates. All right. In terms of a public school audience, what do you have in mind? Do you think they would have been more likely to go with you?
I mean, the idea that the Constitution had any flaws at that era, it would have been insane to them. You would have sounded like a crazy person.
That's true. But also the very fact that I was arguing clearly – I mean, I know you were – in some cases making an argument suited to an objectivist audience in particular, but I was definitely making an argument for a libertarian/objectivist audience because I was talking about the New Deal and just taking for granted that everybody knows the New Deal was terrible. Well, a public school audience, if they even remember what the New Deal was, they've never heard that perspective. So again, they'd think I was crazy.
And then that's when I'd play the slavery card, and then you're completely done.
Yeah, I know, and that's all you need to do with these kids. Unfortunately, yeah. They can't think. So what does that tell you about your position? Oh, that was a low blow. Go ahead. Malice your way out of that one.
Okay, I guess you're right. Democracy is what happens with children.
By the way, I like that expression. You're going to have to malice your way out of that. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. I feel like that.
Okay, we'll start using that. We'll start using that as a verb.
Here's what I want to hear about. So, as your listeners know, there's two things that I knew you were not prepared for whatsoever.
Oh my, yeah.
Let's talk about them. One is you have a very good sense of humor, as I've come to know you on a personal level. That doesn't come through, but you're not a jokester. That's not your personality. So you can appreciate good humor, but you're not going to be, you know, the funny man, and that's fine. So I knew you would have no context to be prepared for my PowerPoint.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, Tom, you have no idea what's coming because this is not your frame of reference, right? That's not the kind of intellectual battle you engage in. So I had a series of tweets that I photoshopped to make it look like Donald Trump was tweeting about you and clowning you. And I had it set up so that one tweet would match every minute of my opening statement, which would be a way for me to keep track of time. But instead I said, you know what? I'm going to have them on the screen running, and I'm not going to even look at it or acknowledge it, which would be my way of outsourcing making fun of you so that I would be able to make the serious argument. And I knew you would have absolutely no preparation for this. And even if you were prepared, you wouldn't be able to respond to it. But my question is, what was Lou Rockwell's reaction when he saw that tweet about how Luke calls Trump every day on the phone crying because you're such a dummy?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, first of all, let me tell people they can look at these PowerPoint slides at tomwoods.com/552, today's show notes page. It's also on yesterday's. I'm linking to a blog post that I wrote after the debate, and I just embedded all these – well, they're not real tweets, but I posted all these images of these tweets, and they sound like Donald Trump. And I hope you – appreciated the point I made that as a celebrity ghostwriter, you are an expert at capturing another person's voice. And you captured Trump so beautifully and perfectly in those tweets. It was absolutely hysterical. The idea of most of the tweets was that he was ragging on either Kansas, where I live, or me. And they were absolutely, absolutely drop-dead hysterically funny. They were so great. So all I can tell you, I haven't spoken to Lou since this, but I forwarded him the link.
he won't take your call.
Yeah, exactly.
Anymore.
He didn't write back to me, but then one day I'm looking at his blog and he's blogged about it. And so that was all I saw, but he blogged to thank you, and then parentheses, I think, for including me in one of his funny fake Trump tweets. The Trump tweets, I'm telling you, guys, you're not – if you listened to the debate without reading the Trump tweets, you missed out on a major part of this. So make a note to yourself, tomwoods.com/552. Go look at those. A tremendous job. Okay. And when I heard you had a PowerPoint, I never use PowerPoint because in presentations, I don't see any real need for it. I almost never see it done well. And I thought – plus it's more work. So I I've never felt like I'm ineffective as a speaker and I'm not getting my point across because I lack a PowerPoint. I've never felt that way. But then I heard you had one and that sounded so out of character to me. And I thought, oh my gosh, that jerk is going to get up there and give a super, super academic presentation. And I have got no slides prepared at all. So that actually, I'll tell you, that threw me.
Yeah. Yeah, it was such great fun creating those, and I just kept thinking of new things as the week went on and adding them to the pile. It was just such
hilarious. And the thing is, I don't want to read them off to people because you need to see them. And I for some reason, and it just captures his voice so perfectly that I did even have at least one person saying, I hope these are fake because he really should be ashamed of these asinine comments. Well, they're so obviously over the top, preposterously fake, but yet they retain enough of the Trump voice that somebody thought it could be plausible.
Oh, yeah. It was such a blast to do those. So that was a lot of fun. And again, and that, I knew you were not going to be prepared for that. Neither were the crowd. And I didn't know if they knew they would know what to make of it. And they all did, which really pleased me, because objectivists often get a rap, I think, correctly for being humorless. Right. And they got it. Here's the thing. So I wasn't looking at the screen while I'm doing my introductory talk, and intermittently everyone would start laughing, and I got confused for a second, and then I realized what they were reacting to.
Yeah, exactly. They're looking at the tweet. So so that was tricky, but still, you knew they were having the intended effect. I will say, let's talk about the other thing, because I had kind of floated the idea that maybe Heather might join me on this trip, and she said, well, you know, I can't find anybody to watch the kids, and she's taking some prerequisite classes for nursing school. It just didn't seem like it could work, so I thought, all right, you know, that's fine. And I only got the idea because she's taking a statistics course, and she forwarded me an email she had sent to her professor, or it's either that or her choir. She forwarded me an email in which she said, listen, I'm going to be in New York, and there's no way I can be at this thing. And I said, well, you know, I happened to notice that. And she said, yeah, I was thinking about it, but it just, the logistics can't work. Okay. So actually, it turns out I had caught her. She was planning to come, but I accepted her explanation completely that she had thought about it and rejected the idea, and then tell everybody what happened.
So this was really, really great. So I had Heather and I were conspiring for a couple of weeks to have her come to the debate. I'd met her a couple of times before, and I came in. So the debate, the doors open at 7 o'clock. I was told to come at 7:20. So I figured, you know, there'd be plenty of seats. I came at like 7:10. At 7:10, it was packed.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to go on at 8, and I was like, holy crap, this is insane. And I got very, very scared because, A, I wanted her front but not center. I wanted her front and in my corner to be seated so you could be looking at her the whole time while I'm speaking, being, you know, bamboozled. So I had a piece of paper that said reserved for Team Malice, and I was going to put in the front row, and those were all taken. Second, and I had to go back, I think, four rows. And there was a young kid, and I forget his name, and I want to thank him. And I put it on that piece of paper, and I said, hey, put the piece of paper on the chair. I said, you have to – I said to him, if anyone takes this seat, I am going to kill you and your family. and I meant it. And I told you that it was Kennedy who was coming. She was going to come, but that night there was a shooting, so they went live with her show. And I watched that seat like a hawk, and every 2 minutes – someone was trying to get into that seat because it was standing room only by like 7:20.
Yeah.
It was packed, and I was all nervous. So I'm sending messages to Heather. I'm like, this is where your seat is, so on and so forth. And, you know, I flubbed the intro. When I went up to the podium, I said, before we start, there's two things I want to make clear. Tom and I are adversarial in a friendly way, so don't take anything we say seriously, because I think some of your listeners thought some of this trash talking between me and you was sincere and contemptuous, which it was not the case. So I wanted to make that clear. And I said, you know, Tom doesn't realize I got a special guest. And I announced Heather, and she walks down the middle of the aisle just like some kind of boxer coming to the ring. And the look on your face, I'm so glad they captured it, was literally cartoonish.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Because you put on your glasses like someone in a cartoon signifying that they're shocked.
Yeah, it was. And by the way, people can actually see the just that little clip is on the same page that has the tweets on it. So if you go to tomwoods.com/522 and you click on the link that'll have all the tweets, you'll also see just that moment. And you're right, I'm nearsighted. So let's see, that means I can see things that are close. Yeah, so I threw my glasses on.
Yeah.
That can't be, because I thought, there's no way, because I've been texting her all day.
So we were preemptive with you. So let me just say two things. First of all, I didn't say the line I was going to say, which is, if I've turned families against each other, then I've already won. that was one of the lines I had ready. But I'm like, okay, Tom is very bright. He's going to, you know, call you and hear New York in the background or something to do this. So I told Heather to tell you preemptively that she wasn't feeling well, and you would then not want to bother her and would resort to text instead of phone calls.
Right, which is exactly what I did. Now, she told me that there was initially a plan where she would have a shirt or something saying Team Malice, but she yes. couldn't quite decide, oddly enough, how I would feel about that. But I mean, she's not on Twitter, so don't blame her. She doesn't know what's been going on between you and me. Her wearing that shirt is nowhere near, oh, you know, like your Facebook post making a reference to the Armenian genocide. Like, I think I could live with her wearing a shirt.
She knows. Oh, we've been talking. She knows about everything.
Oh, it's true. It was just unbelievable. I just couldn't get over it because we were talking about things that sounded like she was at home. So that's why I was so thrown by it. But it turns out she's just a really, really good BS artist.
Or you're naive.
Well, one of those. And then when I told her, because I went out for dinner, I actually had a nice dinner with Dave Smith beforehand, and we were at Morton's, the steakhouse. It was...
You mean Gene? You went with Dave?
Oh, and Gene, yeah. And a few, okay. And Mark Skousen was there, and it was very nice. But it's a.
Why didn't you introduce me to Mark Skousen?
Oh, we didn't have a chance. Of course I would have.
But you did. What do you mean we did have a chance at the debate?
Well, that's true. But afterward, we were just mobbed with people. If we'd been able to mingle, I would have been the. Oh, also, no. He emailed me later, and he said, "I'm sorry, I had to leave early, but I wanted to say it was nice." No, but honestly, of course I would introduce you to him. Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm gonna have him on the show. Actually, we were chit chatting. But anyway, and by the way, after we finished talking and I stopped the recording, I got to tell you something about that. But so remind me. Okay. Everybody's gonna want to know. But sorry, you can't know.
Sorry about
It's a great steakhouse. I don't know if you've ever been there, but I've never been to a Morton's before. Yeah. It was just great. Yeah. But why did I? Oh yeah, yeah. So anyway, so I was texting Heather to say, hey, we are at a super great steakhouse. It's gonna be a great meal. And then she said, hey, why don't you take a picture of the outside, you know, just for the heck of it, just send it to me. But it turns out it was so that she would know not to walk out in front of that restaurant because she knew we'd be eating right near the debate. So she said, yeah, especially if it's got the city in the background, so that she could situate it because she was afraid after all this effort that I would see
crafty.
Her.
So crafty. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. That was a really fun surprise. And it was also fun, you know, that you thought I was just taunting you.
I did. And in fact, I texted her about that. I said, Malice keeps saying to me that I am so unprepared for what's about to happen. And I said, I don't know what he's got up his sleeve. Maybe he's – and in fact, you know, if I go back to the text thread and maybe I'll edit out – if it takes me a minute, I'll edit out the space. But let me go back to December 3rd. I want to actually, yeah. So she's asking me, what time am I getting to the event? So now I see it's all a scam.
Oh,
and then she says, and then she says, I was telling her, hey, I have an interesting thing to tell you. And she says, well, you could at least tell me, given that I'm stuck in boring Kansas. Oh my God.
Amazing.
Geez, terrible.
Amazing.
And then I said, Malice says, I have no idea what is about to happen. And she writes, he's just psyching you out.
Yes!
So, yeah. And then at some point, it must have been earlier in the day, I typed in, I can't find it now, but earlier in the day, I wrote, I'm seriously afraid that I'm going to lose.
Yeah,
about that. So...
But you know what? Honestly, Tom, in all seriousness, if the audience had just been Ayn Rand people, I think you'd be screwed.
It's possible because, of course, of the style of argument you were making. But if I knew they were entirely Ayn Rand people, I would have also modified my argument as well. I still think I could bring a number of those people over. I still think it could be done. And
I think they're less persuadable than you think. And again, you remember Leonard Peikoff was on Bill O'Reilly saying we have to nuke Iran because 2 and 2 is 4.
That's true, but I find that the individual objectivists are more reasonable than the official objectivists, if you know what I'm saying. So I still think that could be done. Now, should we say something about the idea that we kicked around for a future debate? Or is it premature?
No, let's talk
about
it.
All right, but let's not elaborate on the arguments yet, because I don't want you to have any idea what I would say at this thing, and I don't want to know what you would say. I think that would make it...
You're not going to have any idea anyway, Tom.
Yeah, that's right. And something tells me I'm not going to be prepared for this one either. All right. I will tell you that... I did talk to Lou, but he hadn't yet seen the tweets. because you hadn't sent them to me yet. So then I sent them and whatever. But I went, on the way home, when I was in the car coming back from the airport, I told him about how it had gone and everything. And I told him about your idea, this that you're about to tell people. And he thought about it and he said, you know, that actually could be interesting. And he said that actually could be an event that would actually be listened to for a long time. He said, you know, people are interested in Hamilton, but this could really be a big deal. So he thinks it's a good idea. So tell people what it is.
Well, I want you to tell people because we had a few ideas and I know which one you're referring to.
Oh, the one about Rand and Rothbard.
Who is a better person or who is a bigger contributor?
Yeah, Rand and Rothbard in terms of contributions to the Liberty Movement. And we're not talking about Rand Paul, by the way. And in fact, like, I said Rand versus Rothbard. So Lou's thinking Rand Paul, and he's thinking,
right,
this is so not even a contest. I don't know what you're talking about. But
yeah, so who is a bigger contributor to the cause of Liberty, Ayn Rand or Murray Rothbard?
Yeah. Now, we'll have to decide – again, we'll have to nail down the exact resolution because if it's just a question of who sold more books, then you know that's just a trivial observation.
That's not fair.
Yeah.
But it could be a question of who wrote more books and then he would win.
Yeah,
right?
And again, who cares? Like, everybody knows that going in. So I would be interested to hear how you spin it. And I think this year – I mean I did – I knew the basic contours of why you would admire Hamilton, and I guess I more or less understand what your view on Ayn Rand would be, but exactly how you'd formulate this argument, I have no idea. And if we were to do this, I think it would be more fun not to have a debate on the show and just go into this cold. Now, we haven't run this by them. They may say no, but they'd be crazy. We're the biggest draw they've ever had.
Yeah, so, and I don't think we need them, frankly. And as here's something else that you don't know. As a reward to myself before the debate, I ordered a autographed Murray Rothbard book.
I saw you on Facebook that you had done that.
Yeah. So it was actually here's the thing that's even crazier. Well, actually, we're not going to go into that. But anyway, so now I have it in my library.
Yeah, that's great. You have quite a library.
I own every book I've ever read.
That's pretty good.
So you can look at my brain when you come to my house.
Yeah, I'll have to. Yeah, yeah, I'd love to do that. All right.
All right, fun.
Look, let's wrap it up here. We are actually – Heather and I are actually thinking very seriously about taking another – that trip to New York was just not long enough. And the thing is,
she was telling you to stay, prolong your stay, and you, dope, are like, no, I got to fly back and see Heather.
I got to come back because she needs help with the kids. Like, what an idiot. So she now said, all right, you now know – that anytime I tell you to extend your trip, that is code for I'm coming. So amazing. We are actually thinking about making a trip where we would be there, I don't know how many days, maybe 4 days. And I know you don't like live theater, but we love it. And our trip would be, we would, because there are a lot of matinees on Wednesdays and a handful on Thursdays. We'd go to a matinee, then an evening, and then just have fun in New York City and see you. So we got to somehow make that work.
I'm busy that night, sorry.
I figured you would be. All right, stay on the line so I can tell you the secret story. And let's find something else we disagree on that we don't plan to have a formal debate on. We'll talk about it on the show.
Okay.
All right, michaelmalice.com, of course, is where people should go. You know I'm going to link to that at tomwoods.com/552. You should read his book, Dear Reader, the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il. I'll have the previous episodes that Michael's appeared on so that you can listen to our conversations about that. Tremendous book. He's a great writer. And if you listen to this show, you know that's a compliment that I reserve for a small handful of people. So, Michael, thanks again for everything, for the show today, for the surprise, for the debate, and for being a great guy.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. I have a bunch of people who have started up websites and blogs through my affiliate link, tomwoods.com/blue. And I am pledged to publicize those for you as part of our deal, and I will get to that in the next week to 10 days. I'll try and mention some of them on the show itself and in my newsletter, and whatever I can do for you, I'll be glad to do, but I will make sure that gets done. If you're interested in this, you have to check out my special deal before you start up your website or blog, and you can do that over at tomwoods.com/publicity. I got a lot of free benefits for you, free bonuses if you sign up for Bluehost web hosting through my link, tutorials and other things that'll get you started and make you feel confident as a blogger. I'll give you all that stuff for free, plus some free publicity. So tomwoods.com/publicity is the link for that. Lori Calhoun returns to the show tomorrow for a very provocative episode topic, which is the just war tradition. the tradition of theorizing about war and using certain universal principles to decide whether war is just or not. And it's Laurie's view that this tradition has not stopped any wars and is really not very useful at all. And this is a thesis that I resisted for a long time, but I have to say I'm more and more sympathetic to it. So definitely check that out tomorrow, and we'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.